The Undercover Capes Podcast Network proudly presents a series all about the amazing people behind the titles and characters we love. Welcome to Creator Spotlight. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of The Capes. I am Al Mega, and today I'm joined by the amazing TDC host, Times 2, 13th Crusader. What's up, brother?
What's up?
And today, folks, we bring you a real treat, especially for you real comic book collectors out there. I bring to you the man known as Nick Colonies. And today...
What's up? Hi, everybody. How you doing?
Yeah, man, and this is the man, for you folks that don't know, behind Key Collector Comics app. And if you're not aware of what that is, this is the program to give you the lowdown. All right? So, Nick, quick, a little bit about yourself. So, this app, all about first apps and whatnot, but I'm pretty sure there's a little bit of history behind that. So, before we get into the application, let us know a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm Chicago born. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin right now. I got out here from I work in the liquor business, which is funny. It has nothing to do with comic books, unless we're talking about Tony Stark, Demon in the Bottle. That's the only time that alcohol and comic books have really intertwined. But
Hammett Heroes may say something else about that, but that's another show.
Yeah, well, that too, right? So. I've been collecting since 1989 when that Batman Keaton movie came out. Just blew me away. You know, the ambiance of Tim Burton and Batman, just the entire, just the feel of it, and just hooked me. So I remember a lot of people, it's interesting, they can remember the very first comic book that they ever read. That I can't remember that, but I do remember getting the novelization of Batman the movie and just tearing through it. So, you know, the whole thing about it was wanting to continue that adventure outside of the movie. And that's kind of what, you know, we're trying to do here with Key Collector for all those new fans that are going to the movies, that are interested, giving them a guide into 80 years of publishing in comic books.
All right, so what was your first comic book right after that film? If it influenced you so much, what was the first book you picked up?
I can't, yeah, that's something that I can't remember. That was 1989, I think. I mean, the earliest that I can remember is getting Ghost Rider number one, that 90s series. But they had something before that. It was before that.
Okay.
It was probably
the Mark Teixeira glow-in-the-dark cover. That whole run.
Yeah, that one was awesome. I think that was issue 15 or something. Probably not 15. Was, yeah. I don't want you to, but I do remember that one.
Yeah, it was
So what about you guys? What about your first?
I'll go first on this one. Everybody should know. You know what? And I was thinking about this the other day. So I'm actually happy you bring it up because I could clarify something here. My very first, you know, full-size comic book was Crystal the Crystal Warrior number 2.
No way.
Yeah, man. That was, you know, obviously from a toy line, but that got me hooked. And from there, I grew into, you know, like Savage Sword of Conan. So here is an 8-year-old kid reading Savage Sword of Conan. Mom would buy it. Like, oh, yo, check this out. You know, here is, you know, seeing a dude chopping off heads and whatnot. But
yeah, with that Frank really Frazetta art.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was a lot of gore.
Loved it.
But funny thing about that Crystar the Crystal Warrior, that there is a, in the Key Collector app, there's one issue of that title, and it's I believe it's issue number 8, and if you look in the background, there is there's an image of a skull, and it's the same skull that Glenn Danzig from the Misfits used for his cover art. So it's a little piece of trivia for those Misfits fans out there. They are plenty.
See, because what I was going to say was, do you remember, I don't know, how old are you, Nick, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 39.
All right, so you may know these. You ever remember the mini comics from back in the day? They were very, very small.
What do you mean,
comics? Mike, do you
Are you talking the mini?
The digest.
No, not even digest.
I know. I'm kidding.
There were flip books, maybe 12 pages, And there were mini books, something that would come out of cereal boxes, it would look like.
Vaguely. Okay, I'm not really.
See, thinking back, it was probably around maybe first grade. That was my first experience in comics, and it was actually Batman, and it was explaining his origin. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, oh, man, I remember this little book now.
Yeah.
And then after that was a Hawkman mini comic. So I think I got introduced to both of them at the same time.
I don't know why I can't remember that. I wish
they were mini comics. They were very small, something introductory for kids. I can't remember what it was. But if I ever find that, I'll probably, you know, cry in the store and then just buy them.
You break down, think of your childhood. Oh, my God. Where'd all the time go?
I'm so old.
Yeah, I'll throw out my first comic book ever, which is All-Star Comics number 63. And that's a Paul Levitz written comic book drawn by Joe Staton, and that goes back to 1977. Now, I wasn't there for the newsstand release, but that was the first comic book I picked up when I was a kid. And it had Solomon Grundy on the cover, you know, Grundy Crush. So
yeah, Grundy's awesome. I mean, in some ways, I don't know, is Grundy underused? You know, I don't know if they've really found a good villainous place for him in the new world here.
Mm-hmm.
You guys don't have to agree with me. I'm just saying.
No, it's you know, I'm a big JSA Justice League fanatic. Obviously, DC. I do two DC podcasts, so. But that's where it all started with that book, and that just expanded my knowledge and world, and because it just got that interest for me to dig into who the heck are these heroes and why is there a Superman with gray hair, you know? So
yeah. All right, let me guess your favorite JSA member. Would it be Carter Hall?
It's got to be Huntress or Helena Wayne.
Really? All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't know.
Yeah.
Hey, so I just sent you guys an image. Let me know if you've ever seen that in your life, because that was the Hawkman one I remember.
Uh-oh. I don't know if I have – I don't know. You know, the Skype thing is very – it's all new to me. So pop up?
Well, it should tell you that you have a message. So looking like an IM on your screen. If not, that's fine, and maybe you see it eventually.
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to work. Sorry.
No problem. But I just sent you so you could kind of get an idea what I was talking about.
Gotcha.
All right, so are you a collector yourself?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I would have absolutely no interest in doing this unless I was. And that's one of the things that I say is this is an app built by a collector for collectors, and I don't feel that it would have the success and the praise that it's had if it weren't for the fact that at some point it hit me to develop this app because I saw that I experienced a void in the market, which was an easy way to quickly identify key issues or really issues that most collectors are passionate about. So
before you get into the details of what inspired you, what were you doing prior when you were in the shop? Before a key collector was even a thought, how did you manage to look up your first appearances?
Googling. Right, dude? Right? Okay. Making lists, you know, making lists on my notes, on my phone.
And you missed the part anyway.
it's the worst, right? Isn't it? Because that constant Googling, you're just it's mind-numbing.
No,
and it was driving me.
No signals, and by the time you get back, it's taken.
Right, yeah. Right, it's someone's going to take it right before you.
Absolutely. Oh, let me go outside. But hey, if somebody gives the vendor the money right there, the vendor's not going to waste time.
You know what the worst is? It's when you go through a box and you think nothing's in there, and then you see a guy comes by, and then he pulls three out, and you're like, what did you find? What is that?
Yeah, I'm that guy.
You're that guy?
I mean, mm-hmm. But what is that? I tell Mike, here, I throw him fishes. Here's some B stuff. Mike listens. He'll grab them. And then he gives me all the A-list stuff.
Right. And you flip. You see those guys that do it? They flip through so fast. So, you know, they know what they're doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When we rate a box, we rate it.
Yeah. Once I look at a cover, I pretty much. Wrap, yeah. It comes back to memory.
just boom, you know exactly. That's exactly right. But you know, sometimes you get either A, you get it wrong, or B, I mean, how many times have you taken something back home that you thought was something? You know,
nothing. Well, for me, I might be the wrong person to ask, but very rarely.
Yeah, no, but it happens.
It does happen. It does.
Yeah, if I had that power, yeah, that'd be great. But and then there was. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, the perfect example of a mistake in modern collecting is the first appearance of Bane, from between the first and second print.
Oh, yeah, because there's that second print.
Well,
I'll
throw this one out there, too, which is the first appearance of the Earth 2 Huntress, because you had two books that were released on the same day. So one of them was where she was introducing herself to, you know, well, the world knew of her, and then the second one, she was introducing herself to the JSA.
Right.
So I'm talking about All-Star Comics 17. All-Star Comics. It was DC Superstar Special or something like that. That 17, if I remember right, where she came out. Yeah.
I can't remember which one it is. I think it's the one. One of them, I believe, was.
DC Superstar 17.
Yeah, we'll edit that out.
Yeah, and then on the same day, you had her appearance in the All-Star Comics. I think it was number 68. Don't quote me on that, but I know I'm very close.
One of those.
Where she appeared to the JSA.
Well, how do you say that, though? You know, I mean, how can they come out on the same day? How can you really, you know, say one's the first appearance? It's got to be the story content is what you're saying, right?
On that one, you kind of have to rely on the story one. You know what I mean? Because if you read it backwards, it wouldn't make any sense because she introduced herself to the team. And then on the other one, it's more of a cameo. So that one you can kind of, you know, the other one that always bugged me, too, was the first appearance of Spider-Man's symbiote costume.
Where, that's a tough one.
Right. Yeah. Because you had to come out in Secret Wars, but in continuity, it was different.
Yeah, and there's a lot of cameos. You know, there's one
correct.
In Web of Spider-Man. I think there's a couple in Web of Spider-Man. Maybe
in
there's
Web,
one.
Yes.
Or even his first, or even the first appearance of Spider-Man in the costume, post you know the event, because there's you know there's Marvel team up and then there's a bunch of others. But anyway,
all right. So what was the day that you said, "Damn it, I need this app created"?
That's funny.
And if it's not out there, I'm making it.
It's like I'm sitting there. Here's what happened. Here's where the idea came about. And there's a couple pictures on you know but Facebook and some other places that I posted. I live in Milwaukee. I would go to the flea markets. I would go to all the different stores whenever I had a chance, and I would just look for keys, you know. And I was studying keys at that point. I was trying to remember them, like Mike said, memorize that cover. I'm not as good as he is, but I was trying. So I went into this one store in downtown Milwaukee. It's called Downtown Books Bought and Sold. It's a used bookstore. And I didn't know anything if there were any comics. I just went in. And sure enough, this guy had some comics. And the first comic that I saw was X-Men 221, which is the first appearance of Mr. Sinister. Mm-hmm. So and it was a buck. It was a buck, and it was in great condition. I'm like, oh, look at it. So I'm looking around. I found a couple other things that were pretty inexpensive. And I thought, well, hey, this is a great little, you know, nobody's here. No, I'm not competing with anybody, right?
Oh, good.
So I went back a couple more times and had the same luck. And eventually, because he had some new stuff out there, eventually I said to the guy, well, where are you getting all this stuff? Do you have any more comics? And then he tells me he's got a warehouse off, not there, but he had a warehouse with all of his inventory of books and comics.
Oh my God.
And he had about 30,000 comics in the basement.
My God.
I'm like, dude, I'm like, wait, what?
Can you take me to this warehouse now?
That's actually
So
actually the size of my collection.
Oh no! So then you must need a warehouse then. Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
He said 30,000 comics, and after I recovered from fainting, I said, hey, no, I didn't faint, but I said, look, man, do you know what you have here? Because I've purchased a couple comics from you, and they were actually pretty significant comics. I said, if you have this warehouse, but you don't really know what you have, I could help you out. And he said, no. So I went back again and again, and eventually just developed this friendship with this guy. And he eventually, this took a year. Eventually, he allowed me into the warehouse. We had this deal where whatever I found, we would put on eBay and we would split. So I found a lot.
You mean a lot? What was the best one you found?
Well, I found a House of Secrets 92 in almost perfect condition.
No, you didn't.
Yeah,
I
first
want
appearance
that
of
Swampy.
Oh, God. It's so nice.
I want that so bad. I got the first issue, obviously, of the series, and then the second and the third, which are the significant ones.
So we got Swamp. So it's the first appearance of Swamp Thing. And it's beautiful. I mean, it's this copy. I couldn't believe it, because these books are stacked and stacked and stacked on top of each other. But I found a bunch of Cable first appearances. I found first appearance of Black Mask in Batman, which is just an awesome cover.
Oh, yeah, that's
really
a beautiful cover, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really cool. I don't know what it is. That's the thing about comic book covers too. It's you look at them, you don't know. I don't know why they're so. Because I'm not like an art guy. I don't go to an art gallery. But when I look at a cover and I get that feeling, I don't know what that feeling is. I don't know if it's a nostalgic feeling. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. But there's something that's that can only be understood by other collectors.
Yeah, I get it.
And then the other part of collecting is, if you want, after the show, we could exchange information if in case you're in the market for trading Swamp Thing. Because I'm looking for that one.
I'll be getting out the phone before that.
Okay. I'll tell you one thing. What you're trying to describe here, right, is, first of all, when you have your sight set on a character, let me backtrack. So when there's a character that you hone in and you're like, wow, this character's pretty interesting, sometimes that character in itself can expose other characters that they're involved with that you also gain an interest for. Then you start doing a little bit more research, and you're like, wow. You go to a convention and you're like, I really like this character. And I'm like, this is their first appearance. If I see it, I'll grab it. But when you have the book in your hands, it's like, I found it. This is something I really, really want. And this is the first time that they've ever appeared. So to me, I treat it as you are purchasing a piece of history.
God, that's so funny. I was going to say that. I was just about to say it's, comic book for a lot of us. This app, there's been a few critics that have said, oh, this is just for people to flip these comics and buy them for cheap and sell them. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you're a collector, which most of the people that would download it are, it's really difficult to sell your comics because it is a piece of history. You are a protector in the sense you're returning the favor to these heroes who you looked up to as a kid, and you're returning the favor. You're preserving these comic books, this piece of history, so that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands.
Right.
And then you got a dog, wiping its ass with it or whatever, There's something to protecting these books that I think a lot of us understand.
And I'll say, right.
Exactly.
I'll say this right now, okay? Probably the biggest first appearance book I have in my collection is Giant Size X-Men #1.
Oh, my God.
I did not buy that book so I could flip it. So to all the critics out there that might have something to complain about, shame on you.
Yeah, really.
Because no matter what, it doesn't change the fact that these characters did appear for the first time somewhere, whether it's via cameo, shadow, mention, or what have you. It's still part of history. So there are some of us out there that buy this because not only do we want it and we have the interest, but it's also that once you purchase that book, you assume the responsibility of taking care of that book until the next person can take care of it for you. I don't intend on selling on some of my stuff. I can tell you that right now.
That's a great way to say it. And a lot of times, that next person that takes care of it, you talk to these guys. The biggest demographic of these comic books, of collecting back issues especially, is 35 to 45-year-old men. So a lot of these guys are vocal about saying, I'm gonna give these to my kid when they're old enough. So that's there's a connection there that is a family. It's a family connection, and there's a lot more to comic books. There's a lot more to comic books than just heroes on a cover or in a book. There is a connection to people that's very profound.
Let's face it, in today's medium, right? The competition for comic books. You have the internet, movies, and all the games, video games. it's not easy to sell to a kid, hey, pick up a book and read it. So the fact that, you know, when you're as a collector, you reach a level where you're like, I dig these characters and I invest so much time into learning about them to the point where I learn about their first appearance, and then you work for it and you can go and buy it and then you own it. Why would you want to flip it? So to me, my message to the critics is that's a really stupid thing to say.
Yeah, it is. You know, it is. And a lot of it is just hate. You know,
right.
People that are, I don't want to say jealous, but there's haters. Haters. Yeah. There's people that really, the critics are really just contrarians. They want to just say, oh, no, this sucks, or, oh, this is bad.
I'll throw this one out there too, and Alex knows this will be my last example. I have the first appearance of Gorilla Grodd. I have the first appearance of Kid Flash. Why? Carmine Infantino is one of my favorite artists of all time. I got to meet the guy before he passed.
Yeah, yeah.
Why in the world would I want to get those books and flip them because the show is out? No. I feel even more responsible as a collector to make sure that I take good care of those books,
of course,
and pass them on to someone when the day comes. That will give it a good home.
Exactly. And a guy that knows the name Carmine Infantino is definitely not just somebody that's wanting to flip comic books,
exactly.
You know?
Correct. Exactly. Right.
So moving forward a bit here now, what's the technology behind the app? Are you a developer? Did you get a team?
I hired a developer. I'll get back to the story. So here I am. I'm in the catacombs of this place that I ended up naming the Vault, like the superpowered prison from the Avengers comics. But I spent you know, months, 4 or 5 months down there going through each box. This guy entrusted me. I really appreciated that he gave me his trust because he got screwed over once before. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do right by this partnership. So I meticulously researched these comic books, and it was frustrating. Okay, it's frustrating to, like we said earlier, to Google each comic book individually is it takes the fun out of it. It's tedious, right?
Yep.
So at some point, this I like to think that this idea was just floating, was just sort of a unformed idea that was there in my head, and then just one day it was like I was saying to myself, why is there not a resource where I could just see without any clutter just the key issue comic books,
right?
And then that same voice that was bitching and complaining finally said, well, why don't you shut up and do it? And yep. I said, well, that's a good idea, and why do I have voices in my head? So that was
so you actually spoke out loud to yourself.
I was speaking out loud to myself in an empty room.
What was the voice like? Was it like a solemn Grundy Crush? You know, was it something different?
No, it was. It had a very feminine voice, which I thought was a little uncomfortable. You know.
Oh wow, like Hela from Thor, or
it was okay. No. So, but I'm like, why do I have such a girly inner voice? But So in that, you know, being down there in that basement for all that time, it was, you know, it was so with this childhood dream of being exclusively amongst all these comic books, mm-hmm. and then it turning into these shades of a nightmare where I was like, oh my God, I got to go through another 300 comic books, and it was just, you know, giving this app and putting it out there for free without any ads to destroy the integrity of it,
right,
is something that I feel is giving back to this medium, which I've, you know, been able to love for, you know, longer than really anything else since 1989. I mean, and that's another question. Why does this still connect to people that love comic books until they're in their old age? I think that's a powerful thing that these archetypes connect to us so much from, you know, 5 years old to 105 years old. So that's a sidebar anyway.
Here, I'll show my age a little bit. I've been collecting since 1980, but I do have the luxury of a Lazarus pit. So
sweet.
There you go.
That's great. That's
he visits
great
Japan,
reference.
Everybody. So I'll just leave it at that.
I love sake. Let me tell you, sake is like the Lazarus pit liquid that you can ingest.
You just immerse yourself in sake. You just sink below.
I love it.
Yeah. He immerses himself in sake, and he immerses himself in something else that rhymes with it. But I'll leave that.
I have a couple nasty words in my head that I can just rhyme, but I don't know which one I'm supposed to say. So
everybody meet Jason Blood.
There you go. So the technology is it's based on Django framework. We use something called the Elastic Beanstalk with Amazon. My developer, his name is James. He started his own company called Selected Pixel. You can find it at selected-pixel.com, and the dude is a genius. He doesn't know anything about comic books, so I was really nervous. He was my second developer. My first developer was, let's just say, my second developer is awesome, but I tell him kind of what the collector wants. He just gets it. I tell him what the collector wants. Mm-hmm. He knows how to put it into a clean interface that is simple to navigate, and it requires absolutely no learning curve. As you can see, you guys have used it. So you tell me.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
I'll be honest. I've tried to break it.
Yeah, once, cannot be broken.
Yeah, Alex sent me this, like, hey, check this out. And I saw it, but he's like, hey, check it out. So, I didn't waste any time. And I'm like, oh. And I'm like, okay. I go into some of the into the application, and it says search for titles. So I go in there, and I just randomly threw in the Aquaman Volume 1 just because I'm searching for some stuff in that run. And I'm like, okay, so the first thing I noticed was, like, it doesn't list every single issue. So, and then I'm like, why? And then I'm like, oh, the name of the app is Key Collector. So I'm like, oh, it must be only on the keys.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So the first thing I thought of right there was, is there a systemic size limitation to the amount of books? Because there are a lot of comic books out there. So is that one reason why you just stuck to listing key appearances and what have you?
No, if you read Overstreet's 2016 market report, they really...
I try not to.
I know it sounds like a real dud, but it's actually pretty interesting. There's a lot of great information in there, especially if you're a collector, especially if you're a key collector. But if you read it, there's one thing that keeps repeating itself, and it's all these dealers from across the United States and all these aficionados, they say keys, that anything anybody wants are key issue comics. So with that in mind, I have created and continually adding to the database, by the way, the most comprehensive database of key issue comics. So everything that's in there has an occurrence. It has an instance of a milestone moment, and anything else beyond that could be considered a dollar comic book that doesn't really have you can't really highlight anything that's special about it. So there's no limit.
I have so many questions because I've been doing this for years as well, but just for myself, and I primarily stick to first appearances, but you're absolutely right, because it's not just the first appearances. You have origins, cameos, shadows, mentions, deaths, origins.
Iconic cover art, correct. World War II cover art, Joker cover art. There are first meetups, the first meeting between characters who have affected one another's...
It's so funny you mentioned that, because the other thing I tested was like, okay, let's see how in-depth this thing is. I'm telling you, you could ask Alex, I thoroughly tested this thing out. The Superman Flash races are in there in order, number one, the first time, the second and third, because those don't have first appearances. They're just momentous occasions.
Yeah, and people like that stuff.
Absolutely.
I looked at it from the point of view. So there's a few criteria for a book that I put in. One of them, of course, is a momentous occasion, whether it's a first appearance or anything of that nature, even early appearances of older characters. But then there's a value aspect to it. So if it has a minimum value threshold of $8. And there's usually a reason behind it. It's not going to be that way just to be that way.
I do have a question behind the pricing then structure that you guys do use. All right. I am going to be honest. I actually have a comic book inventory program called Comic Base from Human Computing. I don't know if you're aware of that program.
Yeah, I'm aware, of course.
And they kind of also, you know, value books at one point. I know Overstreet does the same. There's a couple other applications that get that. Where do you get your price structure from?
Okay, so there's a couple things I'm going to tell you about the price. I collected – this database took me 2 years to make. And I don't mean I sat down for 10 minutes, put a couple keys in. I'm saying that this database is over 7,000 issues, took 2 years, 2,500 hours. There's 2,500 characters. And I like to say this is this isn't rent for nerds. This is the stats. But so the values are each time that I would study a key, I would cross-reference it with other sources that are out there, books, whatever. I mean, nothing went in there just by the singularity of looking it up. I cross-referenced everything because to ensure there's still some errors because it's young and people let me know about them. But then I would go to eBay and I would take an average of 3 to 6 months of sales of auction sales, and I would average them and use that as my pricing. But I wouldn't just put them up. I would also scale back a little bit on that pricing because this is not these are raw prices. They're not for CGC graded or anything. But
so every issue is raw, period.
Every issue is raw because that's what most people are going to buy when they're out looking for comics. But I didn't want to just give you a value because there are places that can do that. There are apps that do that. I wanted to give the collector a watermark of what they should not exceed when they're purchasing a comic book in order to still have some investment dollars built into their purchase so they can feel good about the comic they bought. So if you look at something, because I've gotten the criticism, these prices seem low. And I said, well, they are low. They're low so that you can go out and you can use that as your stop, you know, their stopping point.
A threshold.
A stop or even a haggle point.
A haggle point even. But if you buy it at that level, you could flip it for and make money on it. So that's really the basis.
Basically,
behind
your pricing is based on maybe speculation, so that way the person that buys the book has a possibility to flip it for at least 25% to 30% more.
It's grounded. It's not so much speculation. It's grounded in actual data. So this average of auction sales and then the pulling back about 10%. So I pulled back about 10% on everything that I put in there.
Okay.
But so, I've gotten a lot of feedback, and this is constructive criticism. This isn't negative. Gotten a lot of feedback that there's not enough grades, and the prices. Nobody will ever agree on a price. It's the nature of the market.
That's right.
It's a market in constant flux.
So that is fair to say. It is true. Yeah.
Because Black Lightning 2 years ago, you could buy it for $5, and now you look at it as a $65-$70 book each.
Right, and on that note of what Alex just said, if I could just jump on here for a second, is absolutely true. So how often does your program have an algorithm or something that takes in current events? So for instance, Black Lightning, for it's a perfect example, just got a show. It went from zero to hero overnight, right? So everybody all of a sudden, I need to get that book. So does it account for those type of instances?
Yeah, well, it's a manual thing. I mean, it's not an automatic thing. So I get alerts. I have everything set up for alerts. I have about 100 words that will send me Google alerts. So when I find out about something like a casting or whatever it might be, I'll go in. I'll monitor the prices, the sales, and I'll adjust it accordingly. But here's what's going to happen in the next hopefully by the end of the year, maybe in the first 2 weeks of January. Key Collector is going to have the ability to enter your own price because people want to look at it their own way, they can enter their own price and they can enter it at any grade possible. And they could also select whether it's a graded book. They could select whether it's signed so they can get a more detailed, more specific to their book. They can enter all the information and they'll be able to put up pictures of their own book as well.
So you're saying, like, if I wanted to go to a convention and I said I could only spend $50, I could put that price in and it'll tell me more or less where I stand.
Well, you could put it in. You could put, let's say you purchase a comic book. Let's say you purchase House of Secrets 92, and none of the prices on the Key Collector app, they don't resonate with you. You don't feel that they're correct. You could put your own price for your own records, your own value for that comic book, so that you have a more personal idea of what your collection is worth based on your own research. But later on, and this is something we've been researching, we're going to be able to pull exact pricing information from a couple different sources so that it auto-populates, and that's just going to take a little while.
And Alex can attest to this, so I'm going to go back to the giant size X-Men, because I'm like, okay, so one of the great features on the app that I do love is that it says, you know, value your key collection. So I'm like, oh, let me put some stuff I know I have. So the first book I went to put in there was Giant Size X-Men. And I know what I paid for it, and I know the grade, and Alex knows that I'm a very tough grader. Very, very tough. I'm very, very picky when it comes to that.
You put the whip to that shit, let me tell you.
Yeah, so I input that in. So you're using your app, it gave me a price that was very favorable. So, good. But to me, I was like, no.
So was it close? Was it close for what your value and your?
If I remember right, it was off by a couple hundred bucks. But when you're talking on the scale of that kind of book, it's not going to make a difference.
Was it low by a couple hundred dollars? Right.
To me, if you use the number scale, and this is the thing that always throws me for a trip, to me, I would say it's a 6.5 to a 7. But then you could say if you want to go with the letter grading, maybe you can get away with a fine, you know, where the pages are okay and it's not yellow. And a book like that with the binding is always tricky to kind of grade that book. So in looking at your app, I'm like, oh, well, you know, I'm whistling like, we're in the money, you know.
Yeah, right.
So, but, you know, with books of that kind of value, the ranges are so wide.
It is. It's crazy. I mean, it is right. Crazy. It is. When you start researching prices on eBay and you try to find an average, you could see a book that's $30, and then you'll see one day it sold for $75, the next day it sold for $18, and you're like, what the hell? How am I gonna do that?
Right, and then Alex brought up the first appearance of Bane, which is The Vengeance of Bane by Chuck Dixon, which I love that book. So, you know, cool. But on average, you know, and I've been to so many cons with Alex, and we constantly see the book, and, you know, in seeing it in memory, and all that stuff is like, on average, it was about, right now, about $50. You know,
right.
But depends on the condition. Now, some vendors out there, this is the other thing that, for your listeners out there, it always comes down to condition. So just because something says $50, that might be a near mint price, but that doesn't mean that at a very good or fine, it's $50.
Right. And vendors are expensive. You know, I mean, you could really talk them down, and I encourage everybody to do that, and that's part of the pricing structure, is by scaling back on those prices. It's, hey, you know, go ahead and use this as your watermark. As I said again, don't try to go over it. Try not to go over it. But this is something that you could easily, it's attainable for this price.
Yep. Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, like when you go. So I want to ask you, how many conventions did you visit to kind of get that personal feel of what vendors were selling these books for? So you had eBay, that's the virtual world, but did you actually go visit some conventions to kind of test the waters?
No, I mean, I go to conventions just on a personal basis all the time. I researched more when I would go to conventions like Wizard World or whatever in Chicago and some things out in Wisconsin. I would go more to observe the consumer behavior, you know, but the collector behavior. Saw a lot of guys walking around with their binders, with all their books that they wanted to collect, and people walking around with their phones out. And I said, so what do you, I would ask them, what are you looking at there? What app do you use? And they would say, well, I use Google to find the book, and then I'll go on eBay, and I'll look for, you know, I'll look for a price, and then I'll put it into my, you know, and then I'll catalog it on CLZ, and then I do, so I'm like, I'm thinking these guys, they're opening up four different apps in order to find what they want, be able to catalog. I said, I'm going to pull it all into one. So I have Key Collector Comics. You have all the key issues, the issues that collectors are passionate about owning. And then you can catalog it, or you could build a wish list if you want. If you don't have it, you can tag what you want to own. And then there's a price guide to help you out. And so if you want to look, there's also something, I don't know if you guys have noticed this yet, but if you look on the upper right-hand corner, you can choose by age. You could look by the comic book age or era. So there's Golden Age, Silver Age, and you could select whatever ages you want to just kind of look around it.
Which is neat. Yeah, I'm such a sucker for Silver Age. It's not even funny. So you said your database is still growing, and you know there are other. I mean, there's so many different first appearances out there. So, and I mentioned this to Alex too, because I was trying to break your app. I'm gonna keep testing this thing out until I can break it.
Yeah, if you do, so, let me know. I probably will know.
Yeah, you will now. So one of my favorite runs is the Jack Kirby The Eternals from Marvel. So which has very a lot of different characters appearing in there and what have you. And I noticed that it didn't have every first appearance. Now the thing is, they're not easy. And when I record my first appearances, like you, I go through many multiple sources, or better yet, you get the books.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, do you actually like open the book to verify? Or
no, I can't. I mean, I would have to have a collection of, I would have to have I'd have to have hundreds of thousands of books. But like I said, I do cross-reference amongst, you know, multiple sources. And then also, you know, as far as the character goes, so I didn't want to overwhelm people with the app. But there are a lot of first appearances of characters that are not searchable by the character name.
Correct.
There's somebody that you'd never even, I mean, most people, they just have fallen into obscurity. There has to be a certain amount of appearances. What that number is not, I don't have a specific number, but if it's somebody that showed up once or twice and they don't have a real significance, then they're likely not going to be a part of the database.
Yeah, like Supremo and Superboy, who only had one first appearance.
Right, sure. I mean, and I'll tell you what, I get a lot of emails from people, and they say, hey, this is missing or that's missing, and I'll vet it, I'll consider it, and then I will I'll add it if I feel it's a legitimate key. I've added a lot of keys since this is launched. I launched at the New York Comic Con this past year, October 6th. And I've had thousands of emails since then from people.
And I know that was one very exciting email you probably received, because it was recently announced. Your recent partnership with a very successful publisher that both of us are huge fans of.
Oh, yeah.
Valiant Comics, or rather Valiant Entertainment partnership. Yeah.
Right.
I'll tell you this.
Go ahead.
It's just so, I'm so appreciative of Valiant. And Dinesh, the CEO and the CCO of Valiant, he is awesome. I mean, he is so down earth and so approachable. Actually, not just approachable, but he approached me. You know, he's walking. So I'm at New York Comic Con, right? And I signed up as an exhibitor. It was my first. Like I said, I was going to launch, and it was very nerve wracking. You know, working on this thing for 2 years, having a lot of my money and my time into this, and then exposing it to a very critical audience. So
most critical, probably.
Yeah, and so I signed on late. They just had someone open up. Somebody dropped out, and I took the spot. I didn't have anything, man. I had two external monitors with a video of the app on a loop, and I had a banner, and I hired two girls for every day, and I had them dressed up as superheroes. So that was the smartest thing that I did, man. I'll tell you, because no one wanted to talk to my ass, you know. They stopped for the girls.
Snap a picture. By the way, come over here. Check this out.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't think they said come over here. I think the guys were attracted to them just on their own. But so I'm sitting there, you know, just trying to get people's attention. Hey, you know, and I got it down to here's a free mobile app with first appearances. That's all I had time to say. People would pass right by me mostly. They'd pass right by, and then about three steps later, they'd stop. They'd turn around, and they'd say, wait a minute, what'd you say? And I said, well, I have this free mobile app, and then I would engage with them. But Dinesh came right up to me. I didn't know him. And he said, well, so what do you have here? And I told him what it was. And he goes, this is great. This is really good for the industry. There's with the new collect. He basically said what I had written down in my plan, oh, nice. Which is this is great for the industry. It really embraces new collectors, returning collectors.
Right.
And it makes collecting more fun. So he got it. And a lot of guys out there, I'll tell you, it's like they feel like it's, they know every single key. I said, there's no way you know 7,000 key issues. Come on. I don't care how. Yeah. Oh, Mike. Right.
Wait.
Yeah.
No. All right. You know, wait. Just in Mike's defense, he does know a lot.
Mike knows 6,999.
That's why I usually stick around 13, you know, so I say 13,000 is fair.
Right. There you go.
That's why he has me around, to pull out Google, but obviously I will no longer need Google.
You don't need Google anymore.
Because the comics is all about me now.
It's funny that you say that because, you know, like I said earlier, Alex and I have been to numerous cons. We've lost count. And we've been to conventions where there's no signal.
Yep. And what do you fall back on? We've gone separately, and we have been each other's guy in the chair. If you watch Spider-Man,
that was a problem. But what we're doing right now is there was a problem with connectivity at the Comic-Con. But we're putting together. This will probably be in the next update where you'll be able to access your wish list without the internet. So at least when you're at the Comic-Con, all the stuff that's on your wish list, you'll be able to access without having to.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's
beautiful.
Hey, no problem. My list is huge. I'm tired of carrying around a pad and a pen and scratching stuff off. A recorder ain't fun.
let's share a funny story here, right, Alex? So one time I went to visit Alex, and we spent the day before New York Comic Con convention printing paper. It must have been half a ream of paper, like a stupid checklist. Which ones do we really want to go for? You know you're not going to buy all the books, but you're like, if I see it, even if it's in my stack of paper, I'm going to get it. Then it went to the notebook. Then, you know, with the advent of the
smartphone. Never reimburse me for the ink.
But $3,000.
And it's funny because if I'm next to you right now, I could show you my cell phone notes, and it has, okay, here are the Justice League books I'm after. Here are the New Gods books I'm after. Here are some key first appearances that I'm after. As I find them, and like, oh, I want that. I'm jotting them down manually because I've been to conventions where you can't necessarily access the internet, and it can be a problem.
I almost missed out on the Solar because the first appearance of Eternal Warrior, black cover. I almost missed out on it because they didn't have a signal. The vendor was trying to rip me off. And, you know, I had to go outside and pray that nobody bought it. And I came back like, no, dude, this is what it's worth. You're trying to rip me off.
Yeah.
We had a point where I got it to where I wanted it. You know?
But see, at that point, you have to memorize what price was okay with you. And you can't memorize it if your wish list is 300 issues long.
But now that's solved.
Right.
And that's another thing. You know, that's so another thing that we're going to be implementing is the ability to move the issues up in a – well, you'll be able to rank them to your priority.
Prioritize them.
Yeah. So that's going to be
nice. Good thing.
And then also in the next update, you're going to be able to collapse those descriptions and those issues – So, because right now, you when you scroll through the app, you're seeing two issues at a time as you're scrolling up. Well, if you're looking at a title and you have these long boxes and you want to find out what the keys are and you want it to be a quicker experience instead of the scrolling, you could collapse the issues down so that you're just seeing the issue number and the prices that are associated with that title. So you'll see 10 to 12 different entries on each as you're scrolling. As you scroll up, you'll see 10, 12, 10, 12, 10, 12. So if that makes sense.
So I want to throw this in here for the listeners, right? Because, you know, earlier I said that the Eternals was not complete, but the reason why it's not complete is because there might be characters in there that I felt were important to me that made single appearances. So whatever, that's fine. I can live with that. But, you know, like I said earlier, I tried to break the app and I found it to be, I would say, 99.9% accurate with Adventure Comics, which is an adventure to steer through when it comes to first appearances in that run. You know, you're talking Legion of Superheroes and Superboy.
Oh my God.
That is a very convoluted concept to begin with, but for first appearances, very tricky. I did put it to the test, and it was 99.9% dead on. So, and I had a smile because I literally had the app open as I'm going through boxes of Adventure Comics, and I come home, I re-verified it all, and I was a happy camper.
Good, man. I'm happy to hear that. That makes me really happy. You know, people, I get some emails where somebody says, this issue is not in here. This character is not in here. And I say, well, there's no way. I remember putting it in there. And then I look, and it's there, and I got to send them a screenshot. And I say, I don't know what you're talking about. And then they write back, and they say, oh, I missed it somehow.
It was beautiful because Adventure Comics, you know, let's face it, it's a very long run, and there are a lot of things that happen in there. But I've been on a Legion of Superheroes binge lately.
Yeah.
And with Superboy and what have you, that kicks over to Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. And it's like, wow, you know, where do I start?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, because of this app, I know where to start.
Yeah, and you look at it and you say, well, you know, this guy put some real time into this app because, Triplicate Girl and, you know, Sunboy and all these characters, you know.
Right.
And then it'll say Triplicate Girl turns into Dream Girl, you know, at this issue, or I think that's what happened, but... It, regardless, you know, I'm no historian. In some ways I am, but I'm no expert. Like, there's people that are far more knowledgeable, but the research, I've created an app that is research on an expert level. And again, I can proudly say that this is the world's most comprehensive list of key issues that's available to anybody.
And if I could just quickly list for the listeners some of the books I picked up because of the app. Adventure Comics 318, the first cameo appearance of the Time Trapper. Adventure 327, the first appearance of Lone Wolf, who later on became to be known as Timberwolf. The first appearance of Computo, the wannabe Ultron. Dr. Regulus, you know, a Green Lantern, Ron Vidar, Universo. R.J. Brand, who was the financier of the Legion of Superheroes, the White Witch, the Fatal Five. You know, these are some of the books that come because of these apps. Yep.
Would a Spanish
shit no one's ever heard of.
Say computo?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, yeah.
Computo.
Yeah, so, computo.
There you go. But see, like Lone Wolf, who later becomes to be known as Timberwolf, might be familiar to the diehard Legionnaire fan.
Not just that, because he was very popular in the Legion cartoon. So if people that really good Legion cartoon, Timberwolf was a significant character in that show.
Yeah,
that's right.
Another thing, man. You know, you don't know when these. There's a lot of dollar. There are a lot of dollar books in there.
Right.
Books that you could even find in a dollar bin. Yeah, that you don't know what the hell's gonna happen. Yeah. What do you have, sir?
Listen, we found valiant gems. Valiant first appearances at a
store. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big
sense.
Thing.
Do you understand?
Yeah, and you know what? Let's get back
the
to
keys.
Valiant one real quick.
Yeah, definitely Valiant.
So when I met, and I didn't know much about Valiant until I was in the vault, the warehouse, until I started finding these Valiant, I started researching these Valiant comics, and I would have passed those up, you know, but Eternal Warrior 4, the first appearance of cameo in Bloodshot.
Yeah, it's like a monster right now.
Yeah, it's like a $45 book, and yes. This guy had probably 15 of them. And I was like, what the hell? You know, I would never have. And that's the thing about this, is that how many key issues have slipped right by you?
Many.
I wanted to ask you a question. So one of my favorite Valiant characters is Ninjak. Okay?
Colin, yeah.
You want to talk about Ninjak. What do you consider to be the first appearance? Is it him in was it XO Alex 6, right, as Colin King, or was it XO 7 as Ninjak?
That's tough to say. So the way that I say is it's not the first appearance of Colin King, and then the first appearance of Ninjak,
Oh yeah, Bloodshot. My bad. Yep, that's right.
You could say he's not in costume, so it would be Colin King, or you could say first appearance of Ninjak not in costume, and then first appearance of Ninjak in costume.
Is that how Key Collector handles those apps? Because there's another, in current comic book collecting, that what I've run into is that a first appearance of a key character has apparently run almost 3 issues long. I could say that examples are Jessica Cruz for DC, the New Patriot for Marvel.
Yeah, Animal Man. Yeah. Right, Animal Man's another one. So, when Key Collector handles it with, let's just say Animal Man, it'll say first appearance of Buddy Baker, Animal Man, and then in parentheses it'll say Animal Man not in costume. It'll say second appearance of Buddy Baker, Animal Man not in costume. And then it'll say first appearance of Animal Man, Buddy Baker, so that's how I'll do it. Just to be clear with everybody. And usually the market has already dictated what the valuable comic book is in those terms.
And then another question, obviously, for a few more minutes in the podcast, where do you see what's the direction of the application? Will you ever have a pay-for version with some type of
classification? It'll always be free. That information will always be free. How to monetize it, I haven't quite figured out yet. I have ideas,
problem I have.
Yeah,
how do I monetize what I got?
Yeah,
exactly. I made no money on Crusaders on the cover case, but it's just definitely, like you said, for the love of the industry.
For the love of the industry, and then, at some point, the right monetization model will come about. But what is one of my maxims is I will not, this will not be something where the collector like I am, has to put any money into finding what it is that they want to collect. So that's a promise that I make. And, where it's going to go, I mean, there's a lot of things that I want to do. I have tons of ideas that haven't been done before. And that's the funny thing about the comic book industry is, as far as innovations go, technological innovations to help people collect comic books, to help them find what they want, it's so antiquated. True innovation, and that's what I have difficulty, getting into that whole journalist media circle where they could help me out pushing the app. But which I, by the way, thank you guys.
We're here for you. Thanks, guys. Sir, because we find the value in this. Absolutely find the value.
Oh yeah, there's no. Yeah, I have no idea how big my Kool-Aid smile was the day that I came home with a pile of 20 adventure comic books.
Awesome, man. Hey, and those are the stories that people are sharing on my Facebook that really make the whole 2 years and the arguments with the ex-girlfriend and the mom, my mom asking me, well, where the hell have you been and all that. It makes it all worth it, Yeah, but, there's definitely a pride in just being a part of this, I appreciate that.
I'll throw this out there too, and when it comes to the Valiant universe, right, you have to consider the original runs, which is not easy to navigate for the novice collector as far as first appearances are concerned. There are so many single appearances in the original generation. It's like, do you count them or do you not? And then,
at least they knew how to kill off characters permanently.
Yeah, yeah, and that's good and all that, but
that is nice, right?
With the resurrection of Valiant now,
for G2, you could bring them back.
So how do you value those first appearances?
Well, you don't necessarily. The value's already out there. Like I said, the market dictated it, and it's being as comprehensive as you can. So those characters are in there. Those characters are in there as their what they are, their name. And then when they when Valiant has reintroduced them, there is a there's an explanation that says, you know, the VEI universe, the you know, Valiant Entertainment Inc. is is like it's a completely separate. I shouldn't say that because I don't know, but it's a separate time frame, I guess, a timeline.
It's like a new starting point.
And that's what it is.
Yeah, a new starting point.
I encourage everybody to look at those Valiant books because they I put more detailed information on those Valiant descriptions, and there is the creativity on those books and what they're doing with that with their line of properties it's fascinating. I mean, it's it so intriguing, and I hope that people really give Valiant the time that it deserves.
You know what I really
couldn't agree anymore.
What I love about it most is the fact that Valiant doesn't have you buying 52 books a month. They actually have an affordable universe where you could actually buy each issue and not break the bank.
Right. And Dinesh, again, Dinesh, I think that's by design because Dinesh is he is for the people, man. I mean, he really, really thinks about the collector experience, not the bottom line, not the shareholder dollars, not this or that. He wants to create an awesome product. If you watch this video, there's this video out there.
It's evident by the books that they put out over the past couple of years.
And the story behind him bringing it back. I mean, as a fan, he saw that it was missing and he couldn't have that.
And then first and foremost, he was a fan and felt that this should not go dormant. I couldn't agree anymore.
So
just to let fans know here, where can people download the application at?
Okay, you could go to keycollectorcomics.com. keycollectorcomics.com has two links, a link to the Apple iTunes store and the Google Play store. Or they can go directly to the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store, type in Key Collector Comics, and download it for free.
Excellent. And is there any other particular websites that they could visit, you said? Or was it Key Collector Comics, and then it's on the App Store and on Google Play, correct?
Right. Yeah. That's so, well, so unless, I don't know, if there's if other people are linking to it, I would like to say thank you. And if they want to... I encourage people to reach out to me via Facebook, via Twitter, via Instagram. You know, they can email me at nick@keycollectorcomics.com if they have any questions or if they want to, you know, give me some feedback on the app. And I you know, what I love about this is that there's a lot of interaction that I have with users of the app. And, you know, I appreciate everybody's input. I really do. I mean,
I'm drafting an email right now to see if you want to trade for that Swamp Thing.
Don't listen to him.
Take mine. Let's take it on the parking lot. Whoever survives will email you.
You know what? All I got to do is dress up like one of those Japanese sumo wrestlers. Mike won't touch me, and I win automatically.
Hey man, you could do whatever. That House of Secrets isn't up for sale, but the app is free.
And where do you live again?
That's where. I live overseas. You know.
There you go. Luckily for me, I'm in a satellite, right?
Oh,
so there you go. Nobody's gonna reach me.
Astro down.
Nick, man, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, folks.
Definitely.
You heard it here, folks. Check out keycollectorcomics.com. This app is amazing. It's for the absolute true collector of comics and even the novice to help you navigate through this wild world of geekdom that we love. Definitely do enjoy it. Make sure to listen in. Again, this is The Capes. This is Al Mega, and I'm out. Later, folks.
See you.
Thanks, guys.
Visit UndercoverCapes.com for the latest and greatest podcasts via the Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Also visit our parent company website, ComicCrusaders.com, all about comic pop culture.